From WYPR, I'm midday producer Sienna Greaves, in for Sheila Katz. We're on the record. Superman, Spider-Man, the Black Panther. In pop culture, these figures reign supreme, and they all got their start in comic books. Comic books are enjoying a burgeoning popularity driven by blockbuster films and hit television shows. With a growing fan base, many readers are clamoring for characters that look like them. Comic scholar Stanford Carpenter of the Black Comic Arts Festival describes why representation in the medium matters. And Rachel Cruz, author of Experience in Comics, says diversity in the people who create, write, and illustrate comics is essential to authenticity.
Oftentimes, certain racial markers can be co-opted for a story, but no one in the room, in the writing room, has that background.
Plus, recommendations for comic book reading. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm midday producer Sienna Greaves, sitting in for Sheila Cast, and we're On the Record. On Monday, the world said goodbye to Stan Lee. The comic book creator, editor, and publisher whose larger-than-life characters and personality revolutionized the world of comics and influenced generations of artists, writers, and filmmakers. In a career that can be traced back to the beginnings of the comics industry, the son of Romanian immigrants left an indelible mark on the canon of American pop culture with characters like Spider-Man, the Hulk, and the Fantastic Four. Lee was staunchly opposed to bigotry and bullying, and he will forever be remembered for the humanity he brought to superhuman characters. Today, a conversation about the growing popularity of comic books. The modern superhero boom began in the early 2000s, driven by blockbuster films based on comic book franchises like the X-Men and Batman. The boom continued with an explosion of superhero content on television and streaming platforms. In 2016, the comic book industry reported its highest sales figure since 1997. Off-screen, comics have increasingly become regarded as an important legitimate media form by colleges and universities, with the rise of courses in comic studies, graphic novel writing, and design. So, who reads comics? Who creates them? And how has the perception of the medium changed over the decades? Joining me from KVCR Studios in San Bernardino, California, is Rachel Cruz. Rachel is a lecturer at the University of California, Riverside, where she teaches courses on poetry, creative writing, and comics. Her latest book is called Experiencing Comics, An Introduction to Reading, Discussing, and Creating Comics. Rachel, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Rachel, how would you describe Experiencing Comics? Is it a history, a textbook, a how-to guide?
I would definitely describe it as a textbook, but something that is a jumping off point or starting point for the students that I work with. I made it clear, and I wanted to make sure in the title of the book, that introduction is emphasized in the title and in the foreword of the book. I talk about how nuanced and rich and complex the comic book world is. And that also includes manga and comics and, comics from around the world. And so I see it as a textbook, but also as a resource for students and for also regular readers who are just curious about comics to dip their toe in.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you reached this point? Why comics and why this book? And most importantly, why now?
For me, comics started, I started teaching comics at UC Riverside a few years ago, I would say about 5 or 6 years ago, but I've been a lifelong reader of comics. I grew up reading comics. My cousin read Johnny the Homicidal Maniac comics, and I read those, and I also read Alan Moore's Watchmen, but I was really interested in how comics started to reflect and how comics reflected my own experience. And I remember in college, I came across Linda Barry's 100 Demons. And in a story in that book, Linda Barry talks about the Philippine mythological creature called the Aswang, which I only had read about or actually heard about through my mother and my grandmother. And she's basically a witch and a shapeshifter. And when Linda Barry interpreted this creature and talked about her own relationship with her mother and her grandmother, it really felt like to me an opening point and an access point for me in comics as a reader. And in terms of comics and using comics in the classroom, I find it that it's a medium that can that's really dynamic and that students find a lot of, there's a lot of curiosity in looking at the interplay between image and text. And so I find that a lot of students are excited about the class. I teach a creative writing 155 at the University of California, Riverside, and it's essentially a survey in comics and graphic novels. And the first time I taught the class, 120 students were signed up for it. And I could sense the enthusiasm that they had.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sienna Greaves speaking with University of California Riverside lecturer Rachel Cruz about her new book, Experience in Comics, and about comic book culture. So how did we get to this point? How did comic books go from being considered a frivolous art form to the subject of college courses?
Right. I have a chapter in the book that talks a bit about Art Spiegelman's Mouse, and that's his nonfiction. It's a graphic text about his father's experience during the Holocaust. And that won the Pulitzer Prize, I believe, in 1990. And so although comics have a history of sort of quote-unquote low culture, and, you know, with superheroes and pulp origins and adventure stories and, you know, characters like Zorro, what I've noticed in the last few decades, a lot of creators, comics creators, have started to use the medium to talk about their own stories. And what I really love about comics is that it's flexible and that anyone can pick up a pen and a sheet of paper and make comics. And I think it's still, comic studies are a burgeoning field, but they are definitely worthy of study. And I think that many of the comics, even though they were labeled as low culture or, you know, they're not worth reading, when we look at a lot of the comics published in the 60s and 70s, we can sort of see remnants of cultural values and societal values in a lot of those different titles.
And as an educator, what is the value of including images when teaching younger children to read or write, or adults even for that matter?
Sure. I think that it's important to first off look at comics as there's a relationship between image and text. And when we're looking at the images, right, there's writing that goes behind them. And so a lot of the time in my classes, we script comics. And a lot of my students are not visual artists, which is totally okay. And I show them a lot of examples of my own comics. And, you know, my art skill is not very sophisticated. And so when they're getting to look at images, they're starting to see a distillation of their script, right? If they're describing a background, maybe it's a meadow, you know, and there are characters that are in the foreground. It might be a whole page of that entire description. But when they start to translate that script onto the page, they're able to start to distill the words into their comic. And so there's a whole lot of writing and image making. And I find that it's important for students, whether they're children, adults in college, to start to see that relationship, that there is writing in that image making. And a lot of the times, and most of the times, it's a collaborative process. And so a lot of my students work together in creating these stories. In particular, I'm really concerned with having students, and I teach at one of the most racially diverse campuses in the nation. I'm really interested in how they start to translate their stories and seeing the visuals on the page and how powerful that is. And so I think that in classrooms, being able to see oneself represented on a page is really powerful, and to be able to have control of that over that, to have control over that story is really empowering.
A quick break here on the record on WYPR. I'm Midday producer Sienna Greaves sitting in for Sheila Cast. When we come back, our journey into comics continues with a discussion about diversity and identity. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Midday producer Sienna Greaves, sitting in for Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about the popularity of comic books and how to get the most out of reading them. University of California Riverside lecturer and comic book expert Rachel Cruz is with us. She's joining us from KVCR Studios in San Bernardino, California. And joining the conversation is cultural anthropologist and comic book creator Dr. Stanford Carpenter. He's a scholar of comics and comic books and is on the board of the Black Comics Arts Festival and PocketCon, a convention that focuses on comics for young boys and girls of color. He has been conducting ethnographies of comic book creators for 2 decades. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
You both have taught comics in the classroom. How often do questions of race and representations come up amongst your students? Rachel, I'll start with you.
Sure. They come up a lot, you know, and not only race, but a lot of my students bring up issues that affect the LGBTQ community. And they're really interested in ways that women are represented in comics as well. We've read The Killing Joke, which is a book that deals with the Joker. And my students have been able to unpack the violence that is done to police commissioner Gordon's daughter, Barbara Gordon, in The Killing Joke. And they've been able to analyze those different issues and the ways in which women have been fridged in comics, or they've been killed off to advance a plot point or storyline. And so, and in terms of race, my students have talked about stereotypes as well that have come up in comics. And so it's something that has become an ongoing discussion in terms of representation as a whole. And so I was hoping in the book that there could be, that they would have readings that they could use as jumping off points to talk about these issues. We just read recently The Witch Boy by Molly Ostertag, and there are gender nonconforming characters in that comic. And they're talking about the ways in which queer identity and gender presentation come up a lot in this young character's life, growing up in a family of witches, and, you know, seeing how being a witch is a gendered, it's gendered as female, and the main character doesn't identify with that, but is interested in witchcraft. And so a lot of the time my students will start to talk about gender theorists like Judith Butler and bring these conversations to the fold. And so I think it's important to have texts that support and can create a foundation for these conversations in the classroom.
What I think is interesting about comics and what's interesting about teaching comics or using comics to discuss other issues is that comics start with identity. I mean, if you look at a comic, what is it? It's, you're telling a story through these affirmatively created identities. There's no central casting. It's whatever the comic creator decides. If a comic creator decides that a character is going to be African American, they're going to be African American. If they decide that they're not going to be African American, they're not going to be African American. If they're going to be white, it's their decision. And I think that what's interesting is any type of teaching situation, when you talk about the comic, you're just immediately drawn to that. And it's not just around the categories that we think about as minority categories. You know, when you read Green Lantern, for example, and Green Lantern runs up against some alien species, right? They may not have an identity that correlates to our racial and ethnic identities here on Earth, because they may literally be flower people, right? but they still have a voice, and that voice will have class connotations. If you go all the way back to the beginning of comics, you know, what is Superman? Superman was created by two Jewish kids from Cleveland who were literally creating their idea of what a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant would look like. So literally at the very beginning, you're seeing, you got a medium where you're having white America see itself through the eyes, you know, seeing itself through the creation of somebody who's other than them. When you have that at the core and you let a couple decades go by, the type of debates you get become really fascinating.
That's a really interesting point about identity being the choice of the comic book creator. How do we translate that to diversity off the page? What pathways exist for creators of color?
When we talk about representation, it's not just seeing a character of color on the page, but, you know, going back to Dr. Carpenter's point about who is creating the character and what's going into the comic and storyline itself. And I think as important it is to have characters from underrepresented communities on the page, it's important for creators from these backgrounds to have them write these stories. And so I think it's absolutely crucial for these stories to exist because I think that oftentimes, you know, certain racial markers can be co-opted for a story, but no one in the room, in the writing room, has that background. You know, and I'm thinking about ways in which creators are finding ways to support one another. And I'm thinking specifically about the cartoonist Mari Naomi. She's been making comics, I think, well over 20 years, has recently created the databases for creators of color, queer cartoonists, and is now working on a database for disabled cartoonists. And so what it is they essentially, these cartoonists upload their information and their portfolios, their contact information as well. And so that publishers can look through these databases and find writers that can write these stories and work on these stories. And so I think at this point, there's over 3,000 creators in these databases. So publishers can't blame, you know, that there are no Pakistani cartoonists, you know, that there are no Muslim cartoonists, right, that there are no Filipino cartoonists. They're on these databases. And so that pathway is making it known that these resources exist.
Well, it's interesting because that is exactly how Black Comics and Black Comics Returns got started. Black Comics and Black Comics Returns are two comic anthologies edited by John Jennings and Damian Duffy, and it literally started with somebody looking at some of the work that they were doing, and essentially saying that they're something along the lines of oh, it's too bad there are not very many Black comic creators out there, and then they put out the call and they did those two volumes. And that seems to be happening throughout the industry, and I think that's one of the things that's really interesting about comics, especially independent comic creators, is that there's this continual refashioning of community that is distinct from mainstream comics, but also overlaps with mainstream comics.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Midday producer Sienna Greaves, speaking with two comic book experts, Rachel Cruz and Dr. Stanford Carpenter, about representation and diversity in comics. How have readers responded to efforts to add or create diverse characters?
There are always going to be trolls. There are always going to be haters. And I think that it's important to continue to do the work of supporting stories told by diverse creators and amplifying those voices. The reality is most of these trolls, they're able to suspend disbelief when they're reading about Middle Earth. But when it comes to reading a comic with a character that they don't racially identify with, they're up in arms, you know? For me, as an educator, as someone who is a fan of comics, it's just amplifying the voices that are intentionally, you know, ignored or have been historically been ignored.
Dr. Carpenter?
What I find interesting about the trolls is that it's basically a group that won. So for the longest time, the stereotype of the comic audiences were like, you know, these 15-year-old, usually white male kids who were socially uncomfortable. They read comics in their bedroom, in the garage, in the basement. That it was this activity that you had to hide. And then what's happened, you know, especially going in the aughts, you had a lot of a lot of interesting moments where a lot of high profile people in Hollywood and in politics came out and started expressing their love of the medium as well. I'm thinking about, you know, Samuel Jackson and about him expressing his love for comics and then becoming the visual reference for a black Nick Fury. I'm thinking of Barack Obama when he was running for office, and he at some point he indicated that he thought comics were cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we finally get this moment where this small sort of out group that follows this medium that's considered a small out medium, you know, out group type medium, which it never really was because it's always had a very large audience in relationship to other media forms. It starts to get the notoriety. It starts to get recognized. It starts to get looked at as being very much a part of the culture. And at that moment, we also start to see that it's not all young white boys. And it's like the young white boys have to come back and take it back, right? They have to come back and literally reclaim a sense of marginality. And that seems to be what's going on with some of the trolling. It's not just about like hating, but it's also about like they're literally trying to take comics back again.
Right,
I
and
find
how much
that
of that
to be really interesting.
Right, and how much of that is a myth, right? As you mentioned, I was just talking to my father the other week, and he grew up in Naga City in the provinces in the Philippines and was reading Superman, you know? And so it's like people around the world have read these comics and have incorporated them in their own experiences with reading and with literacy and character identification. And so that sort of white boy, white fanboy identity is sort of a myth when you think about it in terms of a global perspective.
And before I let you go, can you share with me what comic books you're currently reading or something you'd like to recommend for our listeners?
Okay, I'm reading two slightly different comics. One is Victor Laval's Destroyer. It's a horror take on the whole Black Lives Matters and police shootings, where it features the last descendant of Frankenstein, who's a black woman who's also a scientist, whose son is killed by police, and she actually uses her skills and her knowledge to turn him into a modern day Frankenstein, and he has all of these abilities, but it's not done as a superhero story. It really is a horror story because you have him going up against the original Frankenstein's monster.
Rachel, how about you?
I would love to recommend House of Whispers, which is inspired by Caribbean mythology and expands on the mythology behind the Sandman.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rachel Cruz is a lecturer at the University of California, Riverside, where she teaches courses in poetry, creative writing, and comics. Dr. Stanford Carpenter is a scholar of comic books and a member of the board of the Black Comic Arts Festival. This is On the Record. I'm Midday producer Sienna Greaves, in for Sheila Cast. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.